Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So they call these five sacrifices also Ahuta, Huta, Prahuta, Brahmanyahuta, and Prasita. Ahuta, not offered in the fire, is the muttering of Vedic texts. Huta, the burnt oblation, offered to the gods. Prahuta, offering by scattering it on the ground, the Bali offering given to the Bhutas. Brahmanyahuta, offering to the digestive fire of the Brahmins, the respectful reception of Brahmana guests. And prasita, eaten the daily oblation to the mains, called tarpana. So just the end. Srila Prabhupada states in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 141, anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligation and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? So, in other words, he is performing his duties as service to Krishna. Right? So whatever there is as a duty in a household life, he's following that because that's what Krishna has given as his duties. Right? The Shastra is given by God. All right, and so in the Shastra it says the Grihastha does these things. So he's doing those things out of service to Krishna. He's not doing it because he has an obligation to anybody. He's doing it because that's what's pleasing to Krishna. Right? Because if you're doing it because it's an obligation, what do you get from the obligation? You get a benefit. Right? No, but you're doing it because it pleases the Lord. Right? So that's the idea. And that way, then, you don't have to specifically follow the particular rules of the ritual of expression of that obligation if you're following your duties to please the Lord. Does that make sense? Yeah. But it mentions here, it's taking the path in all seriousness, knows neither duties to any of these, anybody, because in general living, it also includes family members. But now if he feels an obligation in the family, not specifically as his duty towards Krishna, then that means then there's some aspect of these rules that will apply. Does that make sense? You know, it's like if you're attached, let's say, to getting some benefit from an activity being done for Krishna. So it's mixed, devotional service. You're doing it for Krishna, but you also want the benefit. But then the rules that apply to that benefit, you have to follow. You can't just claim now that, no, it's all for Krishna, because it wasn't all for Krishna. Ultimately, it's for Krishna. But it's mixed. You know what I'm saying? So then if it's not mixed, then the various forms may not have to be there. Right? You don't have to do a yajna and this and that. You just chant your japa. You understand? Yes.
So that's the error when so many, or some devotees say, we don't follow the rules, we're devotees.
Yeah, we don't follow the rules, we're devotees, but then how do you know what to do as a devotee? So what defines what you do as a devotee?
Sacrifice.
Right? So that means there must be something. So then we're saying Rupa Goswami and this and that, but Rupa Goswami mentions, you know, about, you know, your worshipping of Ganesh before you start your puja. So how are you taking care of that? You know, saying, how is it working? So the point is these things have to be accomplished, but if you have a simpler way of accomplishment, it means you have accomplished the point. It's not that, we don't care. No, all these obligations are accomplished by serving the Lord. It's not that, we don't care for all that because we serve the Lord. No, we serve the Lord, those are already accomplished. Because otherwise, if any devotional service is mixed, then neither we care for the rules nor do we care about Krishna.
Yeah.
So then what's the position?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's why sadhana bhakti has a form and we follow that. Right? And the form is so perfectly arranged that it takes care of all these obligations. Right? Let every man in this second order, right? So it means grihastha, right? Because we've already described brahmacharis, that's the first order. So now, you know, basically from here, this is third. Third, fourth, and fifth chapters will be describing the second order, right? Then sixth chapter will start to describe the third and fourth orders. Let every man in the second order at least daily apply himself to the private recitation of the Veda, and also the performance of the offering to the gods. For he who is diligent in the performance of sacrifices supports both the movable and the immovable creation. All right? So he's saying, you know, let every man, you know, focus on of all these things, then the study of the scriptures and the performance of sacrifice. These two are the most important, right? Because others, maybe a Brahmin guest comes, maybe he doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Like that. And these others are small things. You're taking a bath and you offer a little water for the... They're not big offerings. You're doing your offering of your prasad and then some of it's put out for the Buddhas, like that. They're not actually a major focus. But study of the scriptures is a major focus. Performing the sacrifice is a major focus. It takes more time. It takes more, you know, it takes the training, the qualification is required, right? Is that? So now they're talking about the offering to the god. An oblation duly thrown into the fire reaches the sun. From the sun comes rain. From rain, food. Therefrom, the living creatures derive their subsistence. Right? So then, if the by the sacrifice, then the whole universe is maintained. Because you take care of that, the demigods are taken care of, and they take care of the humankind. Does that make sense? So it's not that we can say, we don't care for the rules, and then not be involved in some way in Sankirtan. Right? You have to be some way involved. Then you're doing sacrifice. Not that, we're devotees, we don't do our own sacrifice and we don't do the prescribed sacrifices. Right? So we're not asked, no one's asking you to do the prescribed ones. We're asking that one is involved in the Sankirtan in some way. Vritti. And in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 8.4, Srila Prabhupada states, the Chandogya Upanishad describes the Vedic sacrificial process. On the sacrificial altar, five kinds of offerings are made into five kinds of fire. The five kinds of fire are conceived of as the heavenly planets, clouds, the earth, man, and woman. Heavenly planets, clouds, earth. One, two, three, four, five. Okay. And the five kinds of sacrificial offerings are faith, the enjoyer. Faith, the enjoyer on the moon, rain, grains, and semen. In the process of sacrifice, a living entity makes specific sacrifices to attain specific heavenly planets and consequently reaches them. When the merit of sacrifice is exhausted, the living entity descends to the earth in the form of rain, then takes on the form of grains, and the grains are eaten by man and transformed into semen, which impregnates a woman, and thus the living entity once again attains the human form to perform sacrifice, and so repeat the same cycle. In this way, the living entity perpetually comes and goes on the material path. The Krishna-conscious person, however, avoids such sacrifices. Such sacrifices, not sacrifice. Such sacrifices. He takes directly to Krishna consciousness, right? That's the supreme sacrifice.
Yeah.
And thereby prepares himself to return back to Godhead, right? In other words, one has to take the mission given by Rupa Goswami as important in the life. It's not that one just goes about the grihastha business and doesn't take part in Rupa Goswami's mission. Right? you know, just say, oh, we're too busy. But then the point is, you know, that the demigods don't seem to be too busy to, you know, send your rain and, you know, you got air to breathe and stuff like that. Your eyelids still blink, you know.
Would be one whole day without blinking.
Yeah, yeah. You have to buy a lot of eye drops, right? As all living creatures subsist, does that make sense? In other words, there's an obligation. The obligation has to be performed. But Krishna consciousness already includes those obligations. But if you don't understand how it includes, how do you know that you're fully engaged in Krishna consciousness? Right? Yes.
Technical question. This taking on the form of grains.
Yes.
Does that mean taking a vegetable birth, or is it something else?
Is grain a vegetable?
But I mean, do they actually have to take, they just somehow go into
more
grain?
Grass. No. They.
So after coming from the heavenly
rain, grass, and they go into the grain, and then the grain, and somebody eats it, and they go into the semen, and then from there, then. But of course, there's the karma of where you're supposed to go. By your means, you've come from the heavenly planets, so therefore you don't have enough karma to keep you there. But it's probably way more than most people have around here. So it'll be arranged. What, you know, means there's a whole planet, so which grain you'll end up in, so that will end up in those kind of families, and therefore, in the, you know, so it'll work out.
So you're a bag of flour in the convenience store.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. No, not you.
Yeah, like that, basically. Is that, so it's all, but that's how it works. But, yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. As all living creatures subsist by receiving support from air, even so, the members of all orders subsist by receiving support from the householder. Right, because the householder is going to perform sacrifice. That maintains the universe. He's also going to give in charity to the brahmacharis, the vanaprastha sannyasis. He's also going to be giving charity to the brahmanas. Right, because even if he is a brahmana grihastha, he's still giving charity to other brahmanas and brahmacharis and sannyasis. So in other words, the grihastha is the one that's generating all the facility. And then that's being used in sacrifice and charity. Mm. Right? And that maintains everybody else. Right? Yeah. Because men of the three other orders are daily supported by the householder with gifts of sacred knowledge and food. Right? Because like the gifts of sacred knowledge, like the Brahman is teaching the others. Right? And the Brahmachari is being taught by, generally the teachers are always grihasthas. Sacred knowledge of food. Therefore, the order of householders is the most excellent order because it maintains the whole Varnashram. If there's no, as we said, if there's no grihastha, right, means we're talking about basically is what we described before, half a chapter for brahmacharis, half a chapter for vanaprast, half a chapter for sannyasins. So that's 1.5 chapters. Right? And then creation, okay, the first chapter stays the same. Does that make sense? So there isn't that much. So because of its significance, therefore it's so great. Therefore it has so much is because it is the most excellent because it maintains the whole thing. If there's no grihasthas, there is no social system. Like on Tapaloka and that, you know, everyone just sits around under their tree. So I don't think there's a whole lot of rules there, not a whole lot of social, you know. The duties of this order, which cannot be practiced by men with weak organs, must be carefully observed by him who desires imperishable bliss in heaven and constant happiness in this life. So in other words, someone who is not, doesn't have determination and some energy, then, you know, what will they do as a grihastha? You know, it takes work. Like that. It's not easy. Someone has to be convinced, determined, and like that. Briti, those whose senses are not controlled are not capable of following the religious practices required by a householder. Thus, a grihastha must carefully control his senses according to the prescribed regulations. These include only eating the remnants of food offered in sacrifice, or only taking recourse to one's own lawfully wedded wife during the proper season, and then only for the purpose of conceiving children. Right? So all these different things, is they can do these things. Then there's that potency that it makes it work. Otherwise, how do they make everything happen? How does it all fit? Does that make sense? Okay. So also in here is that when we say here, observed by him who desires imperishable bliss in heaven, right? So that aspect there would mean imperishable bliss in heaven would mean the heavenly planets for the karmic. But imperishable bliss in heaven, would be, because they'll look at the imperishable part, right? The karmic will look at heaven that is imperishable, right? The jnani will look at imperishable, and that will be a heavenly kind of situation, right? But ultimately it's that the only imperishable heaven is the spiritual world. Does that make sense? So that's these are more of these things where you don't understand the reading. Otherwise it doesn't just say heaven. He who desires heaven, right? No, it says imperishable bliss. And it said he must carefully The duties of this order must be carefully observed by him who desires heaven and happiness in this life. Then that would mean, you know, karmakanda. But it says imperishable heaven and constant happiness. Right? Because the modes of nature, everything's up and down. So how will there be constant happiness unless you're God conscious? So only the transcendentally situated. So therefore, he follows these things. So if there's any desires or attachments that are there by following the order of householders, then one is able to engage all those things in the Lord's service and bring oneself to that transcendental position. That's the idea, yes.
So is it written in this way so everybody will accept it or be attracted to it?
Yeah, yeah. Because otherwise, if it was written like the Bhagavatam, then who would follow it?
It's a big enough problem already.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so... But if it says these other things, then people tend to take it seriously, if they're educated. The sages, the mains, the gods, the Buddhas, and guests ask the householder for offerings and gifts. So now here's the thing. Yes, we're the most excellent order, but all these are asking things. Hence, he who knows the law must give to them what is due to each. So you say the most excellent, you know, but it's not. But that means you have a duty. So you have to take care of them all. You know, it goes with it, you know. Let him worship according to the rule the sages by the private recitation of the Veda, the gods by burnt oblations, the mains by funeral offering, Shraddha, men by gifts of food, and the Buddhas by the Bali offering. Okay, does that make sense? So in other words, he must daily be engaged in a stable and steady course of devotional service. And someone who just takes up, of course, does whatever he can. But someone who's serious and fixed, then he should have a regulated devotional life and see that he's properly maintaining. He's engaged in his sadhana, in his studies, somehow or another doing something in the Sankirtan mission. You know, he's taking care of the family members properly. He takes care of guests. Right? He respects the devotees. He does all this, then all these things are taken care of. Right? And even on Govardhan Puja, you got to feed all the living entities, so then that's all already done. Okay, so the Bali done. Okay. Then 51. That Brahman who daily honors all beings goes endowed with a resplendent body by a straight road to the highest dwelling place. In other words, Brahman. He attains the transcendental position. So he who honors all beings, right? Then that's there. So in other words, the householder has to learn to respect all living entities. Because what's the tendency of a grihastha?
Keep it to
one. Yeah, all everything to themselves. You're in your house, it's just you and your family, you don't get involved. Like that. So therefore, that's the practice, right? The practice of anybody is where their weakness is, not where their strength is. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So it's like we were discussing before about on marriage. So you're looking at the man. He's trained in controlling the senses and be sensitive to the needs of the wife and others, right? So, but why are those mentioned? Right? They're not mentioned for women. Women don't have a problem controlling the senses.
They do it automatically.
Yeah, it means if they like something, then they're involved. If they don't like, they're not involved. Does that make sense? So that's going to be the thing. Is that the guy will eat anything anyway, but the woman will only eat if the atmosphere and everything's proper. You understand? And being sensitive. Women are always sensitive. So being sensitive isn't their problem. Right? So for the man, it's being sensitive. He tends to be insensitive. So his duty is sensitive, being sensitive. Well, the woman is already sensitive, but now her duty is being satisfied. Does that make sense? So where there, because the man, he goes to the same place, eats the same thing every day, you know, gets into a nice rut, right? When we talk about ruts, we're talking about men. Women generally don't hear of getting into ruts, right? You know, so being satisfied is not the problem, right? Does that make sense? But in that being satisfied, they're not sensitive to others' needs, so they don't notice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in these, that's why these things are there. So the Brahman who and the living entity, so ultimately then the living entity in the material world tends to only look at themselves. So if they start to, you know, look to others, you know, specifically, you know, you start with where you're obliged. You know, family and friends and authorities and, you know, whatever it is that you start there. And if you can deal nicely with them, it'll naturally expand. Right? Like that. Okay, so here at this point of, like in the Gita, Krishna was saying that the pure devotee is one who is always, he respects all living entities. He's a friend to all living entities. Right? So it's the same principle. But it's just being given in relationship to daily duties, as opposed to just, you know, the qualities of a sadhu. So then that means the what was the first one? The balidan means you're offering food for all living entities. In other words, if you honor all, you deal nicely and honor all living entities, you've taken care of the Prahuta, right? Or Prasika. Prahuta. The Balina. Right? Brahmanyahuta. Giving alms and feeding guests. He shall first feed his guests and according to the rule give alms to an ascetic and to a student. Right? So we notice here it doesn't say, you know, first after finishing his meal and all that, being fully satisfied, and if he's got time and, you know, it's how you say, that his favorite television show isn't on, then he shall feed his guests. No, it says he shall first feed his guests and according to the rule give alms to the ascetic and the student. In other words, all that level is taken care of. Those that he's respecting or giving in charity, in other words, what part of this is like a sadhana? Okay, alms. A twice-born householder gains by giving alms the same reward for his meritorious acts, which a student obtains for presenting, in accordance with the rule, a cow to his teacher. Right? Riti. The presentation in accordance with the rule, a cow to his teacher, indicates the offering made by the student for the satisfaction of the teacher at the time of graduation. So what the student, when he graduates, gives to the teacher is a dakshin. You get the same benefit by giving alms to... Yeah, means to those who you know who are begging and this kind of thing. So he's giving to the Brahmins and stuff like that.
Does that mean every time you're giving, you're getting that benefit, or is it just?
Yeah, no. It would be natural, but you know, of course, it'll depend upon the quality of consciousness, quality of who you're giving to, all these different things. But if you're always Krishna conscious, then it always works. But how much you're not, then the material element comes in. Let him give in accordance with the rule to a Brahmana who knows the true meaning of the Vedas, even a small portion of food as alms, or a pot full of water, having garnished the food with seasoning, or the pot with flowers and fruit. The oblations to gods and manes made by men ignorant of the law of gifts are lost if the givers in their folly present shares of them to Brahmins who neglect their duties. So in other words, charity is given to those who follow their duties, not to those who don't. Right? So that's the... You want to ask to know. Like it says, you have to give in charity, but that means you have to give to those who... Means you can do welfare work by feeding these other people, but it's you're not taking that as this first point of feeding the guests, because we're talking here Brahmanyahuta. Right? If you're feeding just people because they need it, that's Prahuta. That's living beings. Does that make sense? Brahmanyahuta means qualified Brahmins. So you can't do your aspect of Brahmanyahuta to someone who's not qualified. Does that make sense? Care of guests. An offering made in the mouth of Brahmanas rich in sacred learning and austerities saves from misfortune and from great guilt. Right? So they have sacred learning and austerity. So that means highly learned. So that they have knowledge and they practice. Right? Saves from misfortune and from great saves one from misfortune and from great guilt. But let him offer in accordance with a rule to a guest who has come of his own accord a seat and water, as well as food garnished with seasoning according to his ability. Right, a guest who has come, because now here guest is defined, it'll be defined as someone who comes unasked. Right? So a qualified Brahmin who comes unasked, then that's your top. And then it'll go, you know, the levels will go down from there, because sometimes it's friends or relative. So then there's another category, because it's not a matter of the formality of it. Because there it's, you know, there's the intimacy, there's the friendship, these others. So that's not the concern. They have another position where they're considered. Right? This is in the, like, worship category, or respect. A Brahmin who stays unhonored in the house takes away with him all the spiritual merit, even of a man who subsists by gleaning ears of corn or offers oblations in five fires. So if a Brahmin comes to the house, is not respected, even in the simplest way. He says here, just some water or a seat and water, you know, whatever you have, like that, is not. Then it's said that when he leaves the house, he'll take away all your good credit. Even if you're such a, that you just live by gleaning ears of corn. Means you just go into the field and pick up what little bit is there, what's left in the market, or stuff like that. So that means a very austere. Generally, that kind of living by Rita is considered a very high level of renunciation. We'll get to that, I think, in the future chapters. Like that, of occupation. So if a Brahmin, that's his occupation, or he keeps the five fires, as Prabhupada mentioned before. So that means he's very strict in his ritualistic performance of the Karmakanda. So that means they're very pious people. But you'll even take theirs. You know, so it's not just, you know, the common person, then you'll take. No, it's anybody. In other words, Brahmins who come to the house can't be neglected. So, yes?
All these rules, do they work this way in the sense of relationship? For example, if Brahmin gets offended, then he takes away.
No, it's just...
It happens anyway.
Yeah, it just happens anyway. He stays on honor because it's not that the Brahmin has to get upset. He comes there and people don't care and don't take care, and then you walk away. And it's just like you perform a sacrifice or something. You have a yajaman. They want you to do it, so they ask you to come and do it. You do everything, but if they don't take care and give dakshin, the Brahmin, he leaves with the benefit. In other words, Brahmins don't leave without benefit. So even if you didn't give a seed or food or water or anything, he still walks away with your spiritual credit. You know, so he always gets. You know, if he does the yajna, and if you don't give him dakshin, he gets all the benefits of the yajna. So the Brahmin never goes without. You know, as mentioned before, the Brahmin eats his own food. He sleeps and he does everything belongs to him. Right? As far as Krishna is concerned, the world belongs to the Brahmins. Everybody else has a place because, how you say, you know, by the grace of the Brahmins, because the Brahmins aren't worried about others have position and power and all that. You know what I'm saying? They know they need that, they have that. You know what I'm saying? There's no sense of possession, so it's not like, oh, then you're proud. No, it's just they don't. It's not that they think in my mind, oh, yes, it's all mine, but I'll let it have some. Because that would be false ego. No, the Brahman doesn't think like that at all. God does. Like that. So that's why when he comes to your house, you're only feeding him his food. You're not actually feeding him your food. But because you have the sense that it's my food, you're the one obligated to give it. So you get the benefit of having sacrificed and given in charity, so that's all there. But it's not you can say, well, I'm feeding the Brahmins. No, it was already his food in the first place. Because otherwise then you have that mentality where, you know, I'm feeding the Brahmins, I'm taking care, and they depend upon God, so I'm greater than God. But no, it's that what I have is already God's, and therefore God is already for the Brahmanas. So therefore, I'm only the caretaker for the Brahmanas' property. So when they come, then they get. You know, does that make sense? You know, so it's there. There's always the balance, right? Like you see, right within a few verses, it said of all the ashrams, the grihastha is the most excellent because it maintains the whole system, but being the most excellent, they're obliged to maintain the whole system. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? Yeah.
So Maharaj, in that sense, it's very beautiful to see the balance because the Brahman has all the power but is not concerned.
Yeah.
So the Kshatriya needs the power and has this combination with the Brahman.
That's why they work together. That'll be seen later. Later chapters will talk about how the two don't function without each other. Means the Brahma can go to the forest and function, but if he's in the grihastha, then there has to be kshatriyas. The kshatriyas can't function without Brahmins, so they go together. Okay. Grass, room for resting, water, and fourthly a kind word. These things never fail in the houses of good men. So that's also the balance there, just for the... You know, if we're talking about the Gold Coast, then here's good men and grass. So you can understand where they're talking about something different. Right? Okay? So grass means a mat. Because everybody's got a mat. Right? Room, just some space for resting. Water and a kind word. Anybody has that. So what they're saying here is that you have to take care of the guests. Right? But it's not that it has to be a burden. It's just whatever you can provide. And if this is all you can provide, that's enough. The Brahman is satisfied. Does that make sense? It's not that it has to be fancy and opulent. No, someone is opulent, that you go to the king's place, you expect more. You go to a poor Brahmin's place, then you get this is fine. You know, you're traveling, so you get a place to sit down, take some rest, some water. If he doesn't have food, hey, nobody's eating, so it's not that you're not eating and they're all eating. You know, it's like, does that make sense?
The Brahmanas wouldn't be concerned with fancy anyway, would they?
No, but if the point is if they went to a king's palace and he just gave them a side veranda with a grass mat and a water pot, then, there's something wrong here. But a Brahman who stays one night only is declared to be a guest. So here's also the balance of the guest. Atiti means not according to titi. For because he stays, stita, not long, anityam, he is called atiti, a guest. Right? So if he comes and you take care nicely and goes, hey, this is great, and then you stay for a week, you're not an atiti anymore. You drop into a different category. You have a place. Does that make sense? But so your means he should only stay one night and you're only obliged to one night. I'm not sure if it's right here, it says that, but if you extend it to three, that's considered very pious. But that's you extend it, not that they extend it. Right? In other words, the Brahman is traveling and then it gets dark. So then he looks for a proper Brahman house in the village. And then they put him up for the night, and in the morning he leaves because he's moving, he's traveling. So that's the idea. So that's how it is. So before, because everybody went by foot, you'd have this. Now they get on a train in Calcutta and end up in Delhi. So it's not like, you could understand if you were walking from here to Vrindavan, you know, take you 3 weeks to a month. So that means every night you'd be staying at somebody's house. You know, and how many people are going and coming from that? So there'd be quite a lot. So before, this is very, very common. Mm. You know, now less.
So yes. It was the householder who would extend it to 3 days, or
means
the Brahmin?
He could. No, Brahmin doesn't.
No. Yeah.
The householder. Like that. One must not consider as a guest a Brahmana who dwells in the same village. Right? Nor one who seeks his livelihood by social intercourse. In other words, who just goes out and hangs around and in that way gets a meal, you know. You know, in other words, they come up to you just before 9, you know, right after the class, and they start talking and hanging out, and then it's, oh, what are you doing for breakfast? Okay, yeah, I can come along. Are you making this? And, you know, like this. So these are, you know, who seeks his livelihood by social intercourse. I know people like that, you know. Very smooth. They always get a meal. I don't know how they're good. Real good. Even though he has come to a house where there is a wife and where sacred fires are kept. Right? Because the rules of Atiti aren't there for the brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasis, though they take care of guests. You know what I'm saying? But his point is even these people come to a place where the man is there, he has his wife, he's keeping that, he's performing his sadhana. It's still, he's not a guest. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. Prasara states. So in other words, this is what we're looking at here is the full maximum taking care of a guest. Then from there, then you understand that's the principle. Then you adjust it accordingly. That will be mentioned here. Right? Prasara states. Any person happening to call at one's house during the performance of the Vaishvadeva Homa should be regarded as an atiti, whether he be erudite, ignorant, unpleasant, pleasant, or an undesirable guest, inasmuch as an atiti leads his host to heaven. Okay, now here's when the Vaishvadeva Homa, when they're doing the regular homa within the house, then that's considered. So you have the thing where just in the evening time a guest comes. But this is that if they come during the Vaishvadeva Homa. Right, so that will be generally your noontime homa and stuff like this that you're doing. And then after that you do the Balidan and all this kind of stuff. So if that's going on, they're counted as a titi and you afford them the same principle. A man hungry and fatigued with the troubles of a long pedestrian journey and happening to arrive at one's house during the performance of the Vaishvadeva Homa should be regarded as the only true atiti. Whereas he that comes before that time is not an atiti at all. Right? Unless the Vaishvadeva is the last one of the day. It could be that's the last one of the day. I'll have to check. Because we don't get into it so much. The Shris do. They're right into Vaishvadeva, but we don't. I'll have to check. Okay, so in other words, earlier in the day, they're not fatigued from a long journey, right? You know, they're not hungry. You know, they're just... So it's in the evening time, it's generally. And atiti should not be questioned about his vow, conduct, or gotra. Without any inquisitiveness at all, a householder should serve an atiti with his hospitality, since the person of an atiti is a venerable pantheon. So the position, in other words, you're dealing with the position of atiti, not necessarily the person itself. Mm. Right? Mm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. So without inquisitiveness, that doesn't mean that means also in the traditional houses, you know, you have the front area, then you have the middle, then you have the inside area. So that front area, that's where you'll take care of such guests. You give them a place. It's off the road. It's protected. Mm-hmm. Like that. But it's still outside the house, actually. It's the front. It means it's like...
porch.
It's like an enclosed front porch. You know, where the family members would spend, you know, times when it's hot or, you know, talking to friends and things and everything. It's a very... That's the main kind of social place. But that's where they're... So they don't go in the house. So they're there. If someone is known and you know the qualification, then they might be in the house. But otherwise, it's there. It's not that just anybody, you don't know who they are, you let them in your house. Like that. A Brahmana residing in one's village or a relation happening to come on business and calling at one's house should not be considered an Atithi. He who is...
Chance.
I was thinking, who's the Chande comer? I was thinking, what's a Chande comer?
Typo.
Oh, okay. Not chance some kind of... I thought it was some kind of charlatan or something like this. Is only fit to be called... He who is a chance comer is only fit to be called an Atithi. Right? So in other words, by chance he shows up at that time. He's an Atithi. Right? So then it also mentions according to their position, you'll give more or less facility. Right? Yajnavalkya mentions the following. A traveler is to be known as an Atithi, and one versed in the Vedas is to be known as a Shrotiya. They are both worthy of respect to a householder who desires for the region of Brahma. Right? So a traveler is an Atithi, not just somebody local like that. And one versed in the Vedas is a Shrotriya. Right? Because Shrotriya means someone who's knowledgeable. Like that. Someone who knows and practices, they're a Shrotriya. Those foolish householders who constantly seek to live on the food of others, because that's what's said here, who seeks his living by social intercourse. Mm-hmm. Right? The foolish householders who constantly seek to live on the food of others become, in consequence of that baseness after death, the cattle of those who give them food. Right? Because you want to live off their food, so it's not proper as a householder. So you can become their cattle. Then they will feed you every day. So mm-hmm. then you are living off their food. Mm-hmm. No problem. Right? Very just.
Got your wish.
Yeah, that's the whole point. The guest who is sent by the setting of the sun, so that's what he's saying. Right? Mm-hmm. Who is a chance comer who comes at the time, so this Vishwadeva must be. It must be, it's an evening one. A guest who is sent by the setting sun in the evening, right? Because the sun set. Otherwise, if the sun didn't set, they keep walking. But the sun's setting, so therefore it's dark. There are no roads, you know, the lights out there on the roads. It's just dirt roads. And you don't know what's out there. So then they come to your house. Guest who is sent by the setting sun in the evening must not be driven away by a householder, whether he have come at supper time or at an inopportune moment. He must not stay in the house without entertainment. Right. So even if he comes at a time that's inopportune, you're already there or you're going to eat or you have other things going on, it doesn't matter. They're to be taken care of. Right? Entertainment doesn't mean that, you know, you got to get out and dance on the table for them or something. You know, something. Entertainment means that you're taking care of them. You know, let him not eat any food which he does not offer to his guest. The hospitable reception of guests procures wealth, fame, long life, and heavenly bliss. So, in other words, anybody who is a guest, you don't eat something you're not offering them. You know, you give them something simple and you're eating fancy. Whatever you're eating is what you give your guests. Right? So that's always the principle. Let him offer to his guests seats, rooms, beds, attendance on departure, and honor while they stay. To the most distinguished in the best form, to the lower ones in a lower form, to equals in an equal manner, right? So that's how you match it, because there may be a variety of who fits into this category, the Titi. One, it should be a Brahman, a qualified who comes like that, but at the same time, it could also be just anybody who comes at that time, right? So therefore, the higher ones, they would be given in more excellent arrangements, more effort, more time. And the lower ones would be given, you know, basic, that they're comfortable. Right, and equals to be given on what you yourself would do. Right, in other words, higher ones would be more than what you do on use in a daily kind of thing. Those who are lower, it would be less than what you would use. Equals would be what you would use. Right, to some extent. If another guest comes after the Vaishvadeva offering has been finished, the householder must give him food according to his ability, but not repeat the Bali offering. Okay, that's another thing. So, in other words, it means someone else comes then, yeah, it means that doesn't matter to us because we don't have to do a Bali offering. It just, in other words, it just means that he'll make arrangements for further food, but he doesn't have to go through the whole ritual after offering it, taking it around and giving all the different bhutas and all that. It's just because he's prepared, he has to cook some more rice, so he just cooks some more rice and then it's... Brahman shall not name his family and Vedic Gotra in order to obtain a meal. So, you know, it's one that you don't ask, you don't, you know, what is it? Don't ask, don't tell. Yeah. So that's a Vedic thing. A Brahman shall not name his family and Vedic Gotra in order to obtain a meal, and he who boasts of them for the sake of a meal is called by the wise a foul eater, vantasin. Right? So now vantasin is used also for someone who's taken sannyas and then gives up sannyas and goes back to family life. Right?
Okay.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So it's on that level. Right? Like that. So one should be careful of that. But a Kshatriya who comes to the house of a Brahmin is not called a guest, nor a Vaishya, nor a Shudra, nor a personal friend, nor a relative, nor the teacher. Right? They're dealt with differently. Right? Because the Atithi is served first and everything like that. The others then it's a different.
Right. From this point of Vantasin, yeah. Could you consider one, let's say, sannyasi who took it very early to the order of the Guru, that he wasn't actually a sannyasi but a grihastha who took the robe and came back afterwards?
No, you don't go like me. So he took sannyas, meaning to take sannyas, but there would be a difference between let's say he wasn't married and then he got married, so there's just a reversal of the order. So technically he's not on that way of vantasin. It's just it's not an ideal setup. Mm-hmm. But someone who was a grihastha left that for sannyas and then went back to it, that would be considered, because vantasin means, a foul eater means what you vomit you eat. That's the meaning of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it means what you've given up. But he technically, he's given up the idea, but he was never involved. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, but this, we're talking about vantasi, it is actually meaning he was with his wife and family, he took sannyas. Then he went back to his wife.
Okay.
You know, but it's considered bad, but it might happen. But he gives up his wife, takes sannyas, then he goes off with another lady, then that's not really recommended. You know, you want to go back. How to go back to where, you know, where you were from? You know, why continue that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So like that. So you'd have to just see. Mm-hmm. If they were married, it would fall into that category. If they weren't married, then it would just be, you know, a rather strange order of the ashrams. You know, in a sense, it's slightly different. Because they don't know, they're going by their understanding and moving on. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? But there's no actual realization of it. Mm-hmm. So it's actually just coming from knowledge, not from...
Yeah. So that would be one of the rough rides?
Yeah, be one of the rough rides, yeah. Okay, Vriti, rather than being respected as qualified guests, Atithi, these persons should partake in offerings, offering respect to qualified guests, or would teach how to respect them. In other words, let's say these others, if you had a qualified guest, a Brahmin, and you had a personal friend, a relative, a teacher, or even any of these others, that guest is there, then these, what we call, you know, some variety of guest, they might help you in serving the actual guest. You know what I'm saying? Then afterwards they would eat. In other words, they don't eat with the guest. Right? There's an order here. You know, in other words, there's the guest. Then there's others who are in a respectable position. Right? Then there's the dependents. Right? Then the grihastha eats himself. So that's when he would, you know, friends or relatives or like that. They would eat at that last stage. So it's all a matter of where they're eating in the order. It's not that everybody comes in and just sits down and it's, how you say, you know, you and the kid and the mongoose and the whole thing happening and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's like that. You know, it's not, that doesn't, it's not exactly how it works. But if a Kshatriya comes to the house of a Brahmin in the matter of a guest, the household may feed him after the above-mentioned Brahmanas have eaten. Right? So he'll feed him, but after they have eaten. Right? There's also the consideration, okay, if he's an emperor, you might feed him with the Brahmins. But at the same time, most likely he wouldn't eat
just
at that
drop
time.
By.
Yeah, no, but in other words, you know, an emperor is worth, you know, so many others because one emperor protects so many Brahmins, so they're in a very exalted position. But at the same time, as if they're on that position, you know, in actual understanding, then they would respect the Brahmins, so they would want to help there. But if they weren't as qualified, then they might be proud. So then, you know. But it would still have to be with the Brahmin's permission. Even a Vaishya and Shudra who have approached his house in the manner of guests, he may allow to eat in the time of his dependents and assistants. Right? Because that's the third group. He hasn't eaten yet. Right? So in other words, first is the Brahmins. Then if there's a Kshatriya, then they would be next. If not, then it would be his dependents and assistants, which would then include if any Vaishyas or Shudras are there. Right? These are persons you don't know. The Vaishya and Shudra. It's not like friends or stuff like that, because they go into the category of friends. Right? Showing thereby his compassionate disposition, right? Dependents and guests. So he means all the kids, all the things like that, the old people, anyone like that. Servants. If you have servants that live in the house, that kind of that you're feeding, they would eat at this time. You know, not like the European thing where they kind of just get the scraps at the end. No, that they're fed before you're fed. You know, or their portion is put aside before you're fed. Okay, even to others, personal friends and so forth who have come to his house out of affection, he may give food garnished with seasoning according to his ability at the time with his wife. So that means at the end. Right? And the grihastha has all this obligation, so then he and his wife are eating last. So then at that time, then personal friends and, you know, so forth, in other words, the person from the village, you know, like this, that they would eat at that time. But it's just because he's local that you're not obliged to put him in that other category. If you consider him senior and all that, then you can do that. You know, you invite someone over to the house, you feed them, and then afterwards you feed everybody like that, and then you eat last. That works fine. But it's not that you're obliged, it's because you consider. But this other, whether you consider him senior or not, it doesn't matter. They're in the titi, you deal with them like this. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. Without hesitation, he may give food even before his guests. Now that means the guests are there, so they're the first ones to eat, right? The official. But here's a group that you can give food before them. But it's very important to note the arrangements are separate. Not that where you're going to feed them, you set them up and all that. I've had that happen so many times. Really annoying. Without hesitation may give food even before his guests to the following persons, namely to newly married women, to infants, to the sick, and to pregnant women. Because generally in houses, you know, the kitchen is big, and the kitchen opens out into the formal eating area, and it has inside eating areas. So they would eat in the inside. So you're cooking, you're finishing, maybe offering, they're sitting over there, the kids, you know, whatever it is, they're eating, all this and that, while you're making all the arrangements for the guest. Then the guest is fed, then you see everybody else is taken care of, then you'll eat last. Does that make sense? But it's not that they're sitting there and then they sit their kid down next to you and then, you know, this one is there. No, it's not like that. Because then there's no, you know, they say, oh, we don't have space. They always have space. You know, then feed them in the kitchen, you know, or in your bedroom. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, but if they have a one-room studio, you can't complain. Right?
To the best of their abilities. To the best of their abilities.
Yes. But the foolish, right, does that make sense? So you have to get. But the foolish man who eats first without having given food to these persons does not know that after death he himself will be devoured by dogs and vultures. Right.
With inspiration.
Yeah, yes. Because you know they They eat first.
In the kitchen, I'm not upset.
Yeah. Okay, so in other words, his guests, his those who are his dependents, right, those all have to be fed first. Then he can eat. Does that make sense? You know, even if it's not first, means they've been arranged for. It's not the dependents, whatever's left over, they get. Does that make sense? You know, we're not talking about the cleaning lady who comes in and goes out. That, if there's something left, he might give. We're talking about those who are dependent. They live in the house. They're servants. They take care of these. You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing. So I'm not sure how much this means anything to anybody here. But, you know, I always wondered when our servants were supposed to eat.
She must be hungry by now.
Yeah. She, we're talking about all 20 of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then there's the question of, you know, is there any difference between the valets and the butlers and the, you know, the kitchen maids and the, you know, housemaids and like that. Okay. After the brahmanas, the kinsmen, and the servants have dined, the house owner's wife may afterwards eat what remains. Right? So, in other words, brahmins are first, right? Then the kinsmen, then the servants. Then he eats, right? So that's the four. So the Brahmins, that's where the Atithi goes. You know, your special guests, right? And if you're feeding anybody who they can't wait, you know, or they have a problem, right? Infants don't wait. Sick people, pregnant, they just, when it's they have to eat when they have to eat, right? Mm-hmm. But that's separately arranged, right? Kinsmen, so that would also include, you know, relatives or things like that. So there's a little bit of formality or something there. Then they're there. Or that's where you put the Kshatriyas, right? Like that. And then with the servants, that's where you put the Vaishyas and Shudras, right? That are there. And then after they have dined, then the house owner's wife may afterwards eat what remains. And that would also be where close friends and you know, like that, relatives would be non-formality, they would eat at this point. Because if they're so close, they would probably help you with the others. Right? They come over and it's that time, so then they'll help you, you know, serving and doing this and that. Having means he may eat what remains. So in other words, if there's a shortage, who knows about it?
You.
So then you know to cook more. Mm-hmm. But if you've already eaten and the servants don't get enough, you'll never know about it. Right? So even you think you're taking care, you're not. Mm-hmm. Having honored the gods, the sages, men, the maids, and the guardian deities of the house, the householder shall eat afterwards what remains. Because you're making the offering and the yajna, and then you're offering to the Balidan. Like that. I'm not sure. Did it mention Balidan? It's just for... I'm not sure if it mentions here. What it says in the Pasita. Prahuta. Okay, here's just after you've done the offering, this is where it goes. After having thus daily offered the sacrificial food, let him throw Bali offerings in all directions of the compass, proceeding from the east to the south, to Indra, Yama, Varuna, Soma, as well as to the servants of these deities. Right? Because generally you even see in some temples, they even have the Bali peak. They have an actual place where it's put. It's a pucca built place, generally a stone that's put there all around. Saying, adoration of the Marus, he shall scatter some food near the door and some in water. Saying, adoration to the waters, he shall throw them on the pestle and mortar. Speaking thus, adoration to the trees, right? Because the mortar and pestle comes from the trees, right? Near the head of the bed, he shall make an offering to Shri, fortune. Near the foot of his bed, to Bhadrakali. In the center of his house, let him place a Bali for Brahman and for Vastospati, the lord of the dwelling. Conjointly. What does that mean, conjointly? Oh, it means it's for Brahman and for Vastupurush. Let him throw up in the air a Bali for all the gods, and in the daytime one for the goblins. roaming about by day, and in the evening one for the goblins that walk at night. In the upper story, let him offer a bali to Sarvatmabhuti, but let him throw what remains from these offerings in the southerly direction to the mains. Okay, so after everybody, then the forefathers. Let him gently place on the ground some food for dogs, outcasts, chandalas, swapachas, those afflicted with diseases that are punishable of former sins, crows, and insects. It says gently. You don't just throw it. You go up and put it, because it's a sin to throw it on the ground, because then you're prepped, or I'll give you. No, you have to go up, because it's an offering. Mm-hmm. Like that. Okay? That's the Balidan. That would be done after every offering. Right? So after your breakfast offering, you do that. After your lunch offering, you do that. After the evening offering, you do that. Okay? Now we want to talk about, you know, what Prabhupada's talking about is too many rules? No. Prabhupada's already done that. We don't care about the rules. This is what we're doing. So anybody who does that on what Prabhupada gives doesn't actually understand what rules are. And you noticed I started halfway through. Okay. In other words, you know, this has got all the rules. So what's here is that these are cultural considerations that we deal with. Okay. He who prepares food for himself alone eats nothing but sin, right? The Gita also mentions this. For it is ordained, ordained that the food which remains after the performance of the sacrifices shall be the meal of virtuous men. In other words, a virtuous person will only eat what's remnants of sacrifice. Right? In the Bhagavad Gita 3.13, Sri Krishna says, the devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Let him honor with the honey mixture. In other words, there's no question of not offering your food. Right? So that's the Vedic principle. It always has to be honored. Now, were you honoring to Vishnu, that would be proper. So then there, being freed from sin means material existence. But even if they're not Vaishnavas, they still have to offer all their food. It's not a question of that anyone in the Vedic culture is eating food that's unoffered. It's always offered in sacrifice. Let him honor with the honey mixture, Madhuparka, a king, an officiating priest, a snatak, the teacher, a son-in-law, a father-in-law, and a maternal uncle, if they come again after a full year has elapsed since their last visit. Right? So it's part of the reception, because you're dealing with a guest. You know, then a reception. So these persons would be honored with Madhuparka. A king, an officiating priest, a snatak, the teacher, a son-in-law, father-in-law, and a maternal uncle. But only after they've come after a full year. Right? A king and a kshatriya come on the performance of a sacrifice must be honored with the honey mixture, but not if no sacrifice is being performed. That is a settled rule. Right. So in other words, you're doing a sacrifice, so therefore then all the priests and all that will come, the kings will come. Then the Madhuparka is offered. But if there's no sacrifice, then there's no need. Thus, if the king and kshatriya come before 1 year has elapsed since the last visit, then there's no need to receive them with Madhuparka, right? But if it's been a full year, then they're received with Madhuparka, whether it's a yagya or not. But if there is, within that year, you're performing a sacrifice, then they would be received again with Madhuparka because they're coming specifically for that. The priest is coming to do that. The king is coming to attend. Right? But if it's not, then there's no. Then one doesn't do Madhuparka. Right? Right? You all do Madhuparka, right?
We don't even know what it is.
You know what Madhuparka is. It says here, the honey mixture.
So, what kind of mixture?
Good mixture. Nice. I think it's milk. What's this?
Yogurt honey.
Yogurt honey, but there's another thing to it. There's a few mixtures. It's mainly honey, but it's dairy products and honey. It's an achman. No, it's not a treat. It's an achman. It's a bowl, and they take it and. Okay, then you dip and throw in the four directions, and then one drop in your mouth. And then after that, you do achva. So that's madhva. Okay. Prasita. Okay, so that was Brahmanyahuta, right? So we've done Prahuta, right, to all living entities, and then to the Brahmanas. Now Prasita. This is topic 8a, so it's its own topic. It's so big. Like that. Feeding the Brahmins. Okay, so now the Shraddha rites. This means then he's offering, these are at the regulated offering to the mains, right? This is not the specifically necessarily just the water offering that you might do at your bath. You know, the daily offering of tarpana. This would be the actual, on the, you know, the once a year anniversary of the departure of whoever it is, you know, the father, like that. Then you do for him, but it also includes all the forefathers before him, three generations before. I will fully declare what and how many Brahmins must feed on that occasion, be fed on that occasion, who must be avoided, and on what kinds of food they shall dine, right? So now, of all the different kinds of rituals, the prasita, or the Shraddha rites, is the most technical. The most technical, like that. Others are much more lenient, but this is really, really technical. Now, from this, there's cultural aspects that we can gain from that, and how to properly deal with food and serving and that. But there's other aspects that are not, you know, we don't get so worried about. You know, like whether porcupine would be the appropriate offering or not, you know, like that. One must feed two Brahmins at the offering to the guards, and three at the offering to the mains, or one only on either occasion. Even a very wealthy man shall not be anxious to entertain a large company. Right? Because the idea, if you're doing something for the gods of the forefathers, it's the quality of how what you take care of the guests is how much benefit is got. It's not the volume of people. Like a lot of times, you know, does that make sense? Like that. So it's how well you take care. It means if someone wants to feed all the devotees, nice. But unless the care is really good, what are you offering? It's not volume. So here it's saying, you know, two Brahmins are offering to the gods, three Brahmins for offering to the forefathers, or only, one only. If it's, it means if you can't get three, you have one qualified person that'll work. You know, you don't want a large company, right?
So this is only if you can't get any more. It's not like I'm really poor, so I'm only going to do one.
Well, it means you can only take care of one. The point is that one is enough. The standard is three, but one's enough.
And it's about
right?
quality.
But then it's quality, because here it mentions a large company destroys these five advantages. One, the respectful treatment of the invited. Because there's so many, you don't know what happened, where they're sitting, and this and that, and what's going on. Two, the propriety of place. Like, how that means if there's more people, you can't necessarily guarantee that the arrangement of the place is nice. Right? Three, time. Because if there's just a few people, they can come at the particular time and do. Other people, it's spread out over all day and stuff like that. Four, purity, right? To maintain that everything is kept clean and nice and proper and all the arrangements in your consciousness. You can do that, but a large group you can't necessarily. And five, the selection of virtuous Brahmins means you can't select who you're inviting. Right? He therefore shall not seek to entertain a large company. So in other words, if you want to feed devotees on the idea of feeding devotees for this spiritual benefit, then feed less, but with better quality. The idea is not that the maximum number I feed, that's going to get me the spiritual benefit. You can do that also. That's not a problem. It means if the temple has festivals and you put up some money, so, you know, take that, feed the devotees, they're going to be coming anyway, fine. But if you want to do something special, then it's better small than big. Right? In other words, if you have more people, you don't take care of them very nicely. Right? If they're friends and all that, it doesn't matter. You have a big group, you know, hey, you know, have fun. But if it's like you're inviting someone over as a respect, like that, then less is better. Not that, oh, hey, this was, yeah, we could buy this and this and that. No, you don't get into that. You deal with how many you can take care of nicely. Famed for this rite of the dead, called the sacrifice sacred to the mains, and performed on the new moon day by Amavasya. The man is diligent in performing that reward of the rite for the dead, which is performed according to smarta rules, reaches him constantly. So if he's done it correctly, then he'll get the rewards. He doesn't done it correctly, he won't. That's basically okay. Yes, we'll get into this tomorrow, because we'll get into what a shruti is.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janitai Gaurav.